I am just trolling.
From Yahoo Sports, this is the FC Yahoo Soccer Podcast.
Hey, get out of here, huh?
That's what your girlfriend told me.
Sean is right.
The FC Yahoo Podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the FC Yahoo Podcast. I'm your host, Shahan Ahmed, and here in Playa Vista, I'm sitting across from Joey Galino.
Happy birthday to Thierry Henry. He turns 40. I'd like to point that out.
And also Alex Baker.
You look at me when I talk to you. You look at me.
All right. I don't know what that means entirely, but
I'm a little scared.
That was a weird Guardiola reference. I can't believe you guys missed that.
Oh, yeah. By the way, Joseph Galino, or Josep Galino, as we're calling him today, may officially be changing his name to Pep Galino.
I think Pep Guardolino is also under consideration.
Fair enough. Well, I guess we're picking our own nicknames. All right, Black Mamba.
Sean, you're definitely the special one.
I will take that as a compliment. Well, before we go there, let's go back to Pep Guardiola's former club and start with Real Madrid, Barcelona. Midweek, we had the second leg of the Spanish Super Cup, and last Sunday was actually the first leg. And comprehensively, Real Madrid rotated their squad, didn't really necessarily even use all their starters. I mean, the second leg started with Isco, Casemiro, and Gareth Bale sitting on the bench, Cristiano Ronaldo suspended, and Real Madrid still did a number. I mean, Marco Asensio was the star of the day, but on the whole, Real Madrid just overpowered Barcelona, won an aggregate of 5-1, marking Zinedine Zidane's seventh trophy as a manager. He's only been in charge a year and a half. Two Champions Leagues, but seven trophies, which is actually one more trophy than he won as a player with Real Madrid. This is stunning. I actually think I saw a stat somewhere that said he's only lost seven matches. He has as many trophies as defeats. It's insane. In the aftermath, Gerard Piqué actually was quoted, I believe, by Sid Lowe as saying that this is the first time that he actually felt...
Inferior.
That's the right word. And Piqué has been at the club for 9 years. That kind of goes to show you where Barcelona has been, but it really goes to speak to where Real Madrid is currently. From watching those two legs, from everything that's been said beforehand, after, let's start with you, Alex. What do you take away from these two legs where Real Madrid put in a lot of their youth? Mateo Kovacic started both matches. He's only 23. You know, Asensio, I mentioned earlier, only 21. They came in against a full-strength Barcelona for what they have now, without Neymar, obviously, but a full-strength Barcelona, and won both legs, home and away. What did you take away from this, Alex?
I think that this is a case of Barcelona losing its identity to some degree and perhaps being a bit more in decline over the past few years than we've realized. I think the loss of Xavi, when he left, was definitely a bigger blow than maybe we thought. Iniesta's certainly not the player he was. He's a bit more injury-prone. So we don't really have the same kind of midfield metronome that the great Barcelonas of earlier this decade did. And I think that what's papered over that is the fact that they've got, you know, what Shahan once called the best attacking trio in the history of the sport, and I certainly don't disagree. So I think that the MSN of Neymar, Messi, and Suarez has carried Barcelona over the line a lot when maybe this team has just not been that good for some time. Now that trio has been fractured. Neymar's gone. Suarez will be gone, injured for a month. There's a lot of other things. There aren't players coming through La Masia. I don't really see Barcelona playing. They're not really emanating that style you've come to associate with them. While on the other side, I think that Zidane has given Madrid a certain identity that maybe they were searching for back during the time when Barcelona were the dominant force. Maybe, Joey, you want to speak to that?
Yeah, I think that this says a lot about both teams in this respect. As you mentioned, Shahan, like Real Madrid, just Gareth Bale didn't play the second leg. Isco didn't play the second leg. Nacho didn't play either leg, and he featured in several big matches for them last year in defense. And I understand that it's one thing when it's the Super Cup and you want to win it, but at the same time, you got a 3-1 aggregate lead with three away goals going in, so you kind of change things a little bit. But the way that this Real Madrid team is operating right now and how Zidane has set them up and how much confidence they're all playing with, everybody knows their role. It's a pretty complete team. It's hard to find a big hole anywhere. The way that they're playing, they're going to make anybody look bad. And the thing I think, Alex, what you're saying is a little correct about how Barcelona is still really, 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 really good. You know, 99.9% of the world would trade their squad for Barcelona's. However, they've been rocked by the Neymar departure. They had the transfer ban for a while, and then the transfers they have made, by and large, haven't been very good. And that's kind of catching up to them in terms of depth. And it's not as deep a squad as it was. It's overly reliant on Suarez and Messi. And they've kind of regressed, and Real Madrid has gotten a lot better. And that's, you know, kind of where it lies for me.
Yeah, the problem for me is that midfield, right? When Barcelona was at his best, it was that metronome, but it wasn't just Xavi. It was Xavi and Iniesta together mm-hmm. with Busquets kind of backing them up and really underrated in what he did. But it was Xavi really controlling. And the way that I put it was, you know, he's not the heart of the team, but he makes sure that the heart is beating. Mm-hmm. He controls the rhythm of when the heart beats.
He's the brain.
Sure. But it was Xavi played such an integral role into how that midfield functioned, and that is what actually allowed Barcelona to control matches. Now, even when they're playing well, when they're creating chances, which we saw them do plenty, they don't control the matches. They can't, you know, Real Madrid's always going to have those opportunities now against Barcelona because Barcelona can't actually control and maintain the same type of possession and the same type of style that they had in the past. And right now, I mean, Modric and Casemiro allowed this to happen, but Modric, Toni Kroos in particular, and Isco when he's in there, Real Madrid has the best midfield in Europe, on the planet, however you want to say it. And that's actually what, to me, makes them stand out. It's more than Ronaldo. It's more than Benzema. It's more than Bale. It is that midfield. It's Kroos and Modric just controlling everything. And then when you add Isco to that mix, and Casemiro's a much better player than people give him credit for. It's a very similar situation to Busquets in that you can look at him as the guy who destroys the other team and takes the ball back, but he does way more than just take the ball back.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can almost see where the short circuit occurred. You know, Xavi replaced kind of Guardiola in that role, and I think the prevailing wisdom that was that Fabregas was going to come back to Barcelona and be the next guy. Fabregas wasn't good enough to be that guy is what we discovered. So...
And Thiago, I mean, it's an underrated thing, but
Thiago leaving was a blow.
Thiago leaving because he was the real heir apparent to Xavi, and more than anybody. And when Pep took him to Bayern with him, it was everybody was sitting there going, "Wait, who is actually going to step in for Xavi?"
Yeah,
Iniesta was doing that, but Iniesta was always a different type of player. He was always a little bit more forward. A lot of times, he would even play on the wings for Barcelona. He was that third guy you would stick out wide. He didn't, you know, he would come into the midfield, but it was a different type of dynamic. In any case, I mean, the reality is now Barcelona is looking at the end of this transfer window. They got a lot of money because of Neymar. I mean, how would you address what do they need the most? They've signed Paulinho, and it hasn't really been met with a great reception. I actually think it's one of the more solid signings because they need help in that midfield more than even in the attack. But Joey, where would you spend the money? What areas? Let's not necessarily name players because who knows who they'll end up with. I know Dembele has been talked about. Coutinho has been talked about. But what do you think Barcelona needs to even be competitive against Real Madrid?
I think it kind of goes back to the point that you made about the midfield and the point even Alex made about how we got to this point. And we've talked on this podcast before and in our writing about how even when Barcelona was operating at the height of their eminence, it was actually a pretty incomplete team. You know, you had all-time great attackers and a couple of all-time great midfielders that were able to kind of strangle possession and keep it forward to limit the exposure of the defense, which had some good defenders, don't get me wrong, but, you know, Umtiti was a good signing, but Piqué is solid. But, you know, you got a couple other guys who either haven't lived up to potential or are past their prime. So the defense as a whole, Ter Stegen's a good goalkeeper. He's not unseating Manuel Neuer or any of the other top keepers in the world in that pole position, so to speak. And because they don't have that fulcrum in the midfield now that can keep the ball up there and keep the possession and kind of take the pressure off of these weaker areas, that they're getting exposed. So I would say, to answer your question, I would say that they have to address the midfield, and that's why you see names like Paulinho, who they've already signed. Coutinho is obviously a big target for them. A lot of the guys you see them thinking about going after are these midfield guys, and because it might actually work out for them that Neymar left in this way. Obviously, I don't think you'd want that to happen if you had a choice, but it kind of forces them to kickstart into fixing what ails them. And what ails them is the fact that they can't possess the ball like they once could. And unless they're going to completely overhaul the way they play, which it doesn't seem like they're going to do, then you have to address that in midfield. You have to address that possession, and this might force them to do that.
Just for acronym fun reasons, you know, MSN was a great name, and we have the BBC with Real Madrid. The early rumor I'd heard a little bit ago, and uh-oh, I'm still hopeful this happens, is Griezmann, which would make MSG, which would also be a very welcome new combination. But, you know, the reason I bring that up is not just for laughs, although, yes, it is kind of just for laughs.
Well, I just hope they don't play like the Knicks, if that's the case.
the well, I was thinking more of the Chinese food MSG. But anyway, in any case.
Well, it's open to interpretation, yeah, which is the way they play. Open to interpretation.
How does anyone hear that and not think that? Yeah. Actually, my question.
What? Him or me?
You.
Oh. But anyway. Okay, before this went off the rails.
I have no idea.
Totally off the rails.
So one point that I've been trying to make is that if you take Lionel Messi off of Barcelona, I'm not sure they even finished in the top four in La Liga. That team without Messi is just not that great, in my opinion. You know, Andre Gomes hasn't worked out. Dennis Suarez hasn't worked out. Iniesta's in and out of the lineup. You know, Suarez out for a month with injury, but he hasn't been entirely. I mean, Neymar and Messi really made that team competitive. That was what made that happen. PK has been prone to mistakes. You know, Sergio Roberto hasn't been great. Alex Vidal has been injured as well. Their fullbacks, really, since Dani Alves left, they're not that special. All in all, Jordi Alba hasn't been that good ever since Messi moved more central, because Messi used to find him on those diagonal balls up the left side, but he's just not happening. Do you see Barcelona possibly not even finishing top two? Alex, do you think that Atleti could maybe slide back in there and be the real competition for Real Madrid for the La Liga? How do you see that? What do you think?
I would love to see that happen, and I haven't honestly watched a lot of Atleti in preseason. So, you know, I was looking at their lineup for something I was writing earlier today, and the thing about Atleti is it's a lot of the same guys who won the league a few years ago, and they're all approaching their mid-30s. Griezmann says he's going to stay for another season, but he's really the only world-class player in his prime on that team.
Well, Diego Costa wants to go there.
Diego Costa does want to go back. So
he said he'll only go there.
Yeah, if Diego rides in the town, then maybe it's on. I do think Barcelona's going to finish in the top two, but it could provide an opening for
Atletico. Do you think? I mean, they're the second favorite. Do you think that they have any legitimate chance
of winning,
of beating out Real Madrid in La Liga?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so.
Joey?
I don't think they do either. And actually, you know, I think that on paper and just kind of this abstract notion right now that Barcelona may not finish ahead of Atletico Madrid is a trendy thing to say, is a trendy thing to pick. But I also think, you know, there is some merit there. I mean, say nothing else for Atletico Madrid. They kept Griezmann, you know. Barcelona wasn't able to keep Neymar for whatever reason. I'm not necessarily equating the two situations, but there's less turnover at Atleti, and they know what they're doing. They know how they're playing. And we just got done talking about how Barcelona is not really sure, you know, what they're going to do. And if Suarez is, you know, I know he's supposed to come back in a month, but if you really have to lean on just Messi, it's kind of like, I think about it this way. It's like a good season. What turns a good season into a great season in Europe usually is elite goal scorers, one or two on your team. What turns a great season into a Champions League winning season or a league winning season is having that complete team around it. And that's what Real Madrid has. And those are the kind of teams you see win competitions like La Liga and the Champions League. And right now, Barcelona doesn't really have that. And they don't have this paradigm shifting formation with these all time great five or six players like they've had in the past few years. So I would, you know, I'll tell you, I'll go ahead and say it. I think Atletico Madrid is going to finish second behind Real Madrid this year, and I think Barcelona is going to finish third.
It could happen. One thing Atletico has been better at lately than Barcelona is selling players and finding a way to replace them. And I don't know what's happened with Barcelona. Where's the talent coming from?
Yeah.
You're not seeing people coming from La Masia that you're excited about like you were a few years ago. And they're not making good signings.
It's almost like
they spend so much. They're becoming like Tottenham, like wasting money on a bunch of signings that don't work out.
Except they don't even have the youth coming through.
No, Tottenham has the youth, right?
They don't know
and
how to
play. And now they can't close
game.
A deal. They're becoming very Arsenal-esque in their follies trying to replace Neymar.
Credit to Barcelona for, you know, kind of moving into the when Pep Guardiola first got there. Obviously, Barcelona was a Champions League winning side in 06, but they had like a lot of good players, but they also were able to kind of roll over into the new era with Xavi and Iniesta and emphasis on Messi. So they made the right choices in terms of who to prioritize.
Getting rid of Ronaldinho.
Who to develop. Yeah, they made smart choices.
Deco, but too.
They haven't had to do that for a while. So Atletico Madrid sitting here like, this is how we do it. You know, we're a big club. We're one of the biggest in the world, but we're not your level. We're not Real Madrid's level. So like you said, Alex, we have to be smart about this kind of stuff. We're good at it. You guys aren't used to this, Barcelona, and it could be a problem.
Well, Barcelona, we should say, still has a few weeks to shore up that squad because the transfer window is still open. We're going to take a quick break, but we'll catch up on what the transfer window and how that's going to change in the future. We'll be right back. This podcast is brought to you by Hand Soap. Hand Soap. Sometimes liquid soap just doesn't get you clean enough. Hand Soap. All right, so we're back here in Playa Vista, and kind of touching back on the transfer window, looks like in the Premier League, more than likely, there's going to be a change next year. The Premier League is strongly considering, and looks like it's going to pass currently, that next year, the transfer window, the summer transfer window, would actually close out when the season starts. They're going to need at least 14 teams to agree, and right now, at last check, I believe it was reported that 17 of the sides are on board. So it's looking like it's going to go through. Is this a good idea? Bad idea? Let's start with you, Joey. What do you think?
It's a fantastic idea. Look, we'd all love the drama of having that last day signing, you know, as the window closes. There's been some big names that have been acquired. You know, Mesut Ozil jumps to mind. There have been some fascinatingly stupid storylines. Going with Arsenal again, bidding 40,000 or 40 million pounds plus one, right? I think for Luis Suarez, and you got extra time to do that because you've kind of looked at your team and you've been able to see what the glaring weaknesses are, and you still have like a month or so or a few weeks to address it in the transfer window. But let's be real, silly season's already long enough. All these rumors in the transfer window during the summer, there's already too many of them. There's a proliferation of them. It's only fair, if you ask me, and it's for competitive equity's sake, to have the window shut as the season begins. Because, you know, there's an element to soccer that I really like, and I think we all like, where you don't get timeouts. You know, you don't get these stoppages of play to kind of reassess things, and you only get three substitutions. So you've kind of got to send out what you've got, and you have to rely on your tactics and your flexibility and your ability to adapt. And with this transfer window is kind of counter to that. And obviously, you know, the business you do in your boardroom is different from the business that you do on the pitch. But it's kind of like, you know, I don't like the fact that you get a chance to change things on the fly that you don't get when you're actually playing. So I look at it like that and say it's only fair to do that. And it's kind of more in the spirit of the game to have the window shut as the season begins.
So Pep Guardiola, when he was out here for preseason, he wasn't even asked about it, and he brought it up. And he said it's not fair. Those were his words. And he said it's not fair for all the clubs. Because really, when you think about it, for the teams and the managers, you're not finding anything new about your player in 3 weeks. That's not enough time to where you say, oh, this guy's not going to work out. Let's sell him right away. It really, you need more time to evaluate players. So there's no real advantage from a club standpoint. If anything, you're just kind of delaying because the transfer people, the agents, they're dragging their feet a little bit, and you're delaying getting a player in that you want to be part of your squad to help you out. And all of a sudden, you have these weird situations with, like, Alexis is a great example at Arsenal where he's not in the squad. People are wondering if he's actually injured or if he's disgruntled and wants to leave. Players start acting out because they're, you know, putting in transfer requests while the season's going on. No one's even paying attention to last week's results. but this, it's kind of one of those things where you understand why the clubs want to do it. Now, I ask you, Alex, from a league perspective, if La Liga's transfer window is still open, Serie A's transfer window is still open, is this going to be a disadvantage for the Premier League? Are they going to be under the knife to say, hey, we need to get a deal done right this week, while La Liga's like, yeah, we still got 3 weeks?
I think it is. I think it would be a disservice to the Premier League. And I actually don't mind that the window stays open, because sometimes you need to lose 8-2 to Man United to realize what your team is
missing. Oh, I see how this is. Okay.
I'd hate to be a Gunners fan.
Oh.
What Alex is referring to is when United just smashed. Really, to be fair, was not even a youth team for Arsenal that day. It was, you know, and they got smashed 8-2, and immediately Arsene Wenger had been avoiding buying players and went out and bought, I believe, Mertesacker was one of the signings there. He overpaid for a few players, but
he got Arteta. He got a couple guys.
Yeah,
Mertesacker and Arteta worked out. Podolski. Yeah, at least he got, you know, Premier League level.
Brazilian that we got that didn't work out. The guy who's changed jerseys with RVP. No, it was before pre-Gabriel.
By the way, Gabriel's gone.
Gabriel's gone. He's in Valencia.
Holy.
Yeah.
People paid, was it, $12 million for him? Amazing. Yeah.
That's a great bit of business for him.
But I guess getting more to the point, for me, I understand why the Premier League clubs would want to do it. I understand why the manager would say, you know, once the season's on, let's just have our squad focus on the actual season. And I think it's going to change the dynamic of deadline day 100%.
Because how would that – would that mean that no other club could buy a player from –
Yeah, you can't do business with
so
or,
Barcelona could not buy Coutinho.
No,
because the
Premier League can't sell. Mm-hmm. Yeah, their transfer window would be closed, so you can't sell or buy anybody, and all you could do is sign players on a free. Now you could do some backhand shakes where players start suddenly falling out of contract or canceling contracts.
I don't know, guys.
But that's always been, you know,
you're gonna miss one of the simple joys of English football, which is Harry Redknapp sticking his head out a car window in front of wherever he's going.
Well, that's the thing.
With the Sky Sports reporter, I can't remember his name, but the blonde guy is sticking the microphone in his face trying to find something out.
Yeah, I like seeing guys in overcoats with microphones hassling Redknapp outside.
Well, that's the fact of the matter is that transfer deadline day would completely not exist because it would come on the eve of the start of the season. And what's the biggest story of the start of the season? The start of the season.
Yeah.
Everyone's looking for the football. But when it's, you know, 3 weeks into the season, all of a sudden it's like, ooh, there's this random midnight call. But no one on the first day of the season is thinking about who got transferred. It's like there might be a transfer here and there. It'll have some impact. But the big story the next day isn't who got transferred on the last day before the season started. It's the fact that the season started. So in many ways, this would be the end of transfer deadline day for the Premier League anyhow.
And what are we talking about really too? Like, we'll talk about the Premier League here in a second and react to what happened this past weekend. But it's not like there's a quick fix out there for any one of these teams. So I'm just wondering how much would really change. Sure, you would have like a headline signing or a signing that you say, oh, that makes sense for that team. But I'm just not sure how much nominally it would change things. Because you're right. Like right now, it is all about the soccer. And we're not saying things like, oh, this team should go out and buy this player to fix this or whatever. We're saying like, oh, is this going to be a problem because of the way this team is built? You know, at least that's just how I come at it, Alex. I mean, I don't know.
I agree it's an imperfect system, but I'm kind of a defender of soccer's imperfect qualities, you know. And
You're not a VAR fan?
I'm not a VAR fan. I've come to be okay with goal line technology, but you know, things like that. I agree it's odd that the window remains open for 3 weeks into the season.
It doesn't really make sense why it's been like this.
It doesn't.
No. I mean,
January transfer window has a lot of reasoning behind it. You know, you get through about half the season, you might have injuries,
it
makes sense why you get to reinforce midway through the season. If you're a Champions League club and made it to the knockout rounds, you know you can, hey, we might need some reinforcements, we're going to face Barcelona next, things like that. But when you're at the start of the season, the first 3 weeks, there's just no time to evaluate than what you had in preseason. I think if anything, this is really only thing it really changes is it forces, you know, the agents to get their paperwork done a little faster, and for clubs to do their, you know,
business
in the summer, and that's really where they should be doing their business anyway and focusing on the season. It kind of is bad for players because they're moving around at the wrong time. They don't really get to mixed with the squad in preseason or even at the start of the season. They're coming in halfway through. All of a sudden, this guy shows up, and he's an integral part of your squad.
Yeah.
He hasn't been there at all. He doesn't even know like what – you know, it takes a couple weeks for him to adjust and play. From a player standpoint, it doesn't make sense. From a coach standpoint, it doesn't make sense. The only people it makes sense for are the money men, right?
And or soccer journalists.
No, I'm happy never writing about transfer deadline day ever again. All right, we're going to take another quick break before we get into this week's Premier League action. This podcast is brought to you by Energy Drinks. Energy Drinks. They're awful for you, but energy drinks.
It's my beer!
All right, and we are back. So this weekend, there are some really, really good Premier League fixtures. You know, the first weekend, they tend to kind of throw some softballs at us. But the second week, and I'm just going to go straight into the meat and potatoes matchup of the week, which is Chelsea versus Tottenham. This is at Wembley Stadium. These two teams met in the FA Cup semifinal on this very ground. But it's a little bit different right now because, first of all, Chelsea did not really look that great. Also, they don't have Tim Cahill. Bakayoko, I believe, is out hurt.
Gary Cahill.
Cahill, Fabregas. It's a weakened Chelsea, we'll say. Not to mention, psychologically, they just don't look themselves. And as we mentioned earlier, Diego Costa is somewhere in Brazil saying he'll only come back for Atletico Madrid and has no interest of ever playing for Chelsea again. So,
awesome.
So what do you make of this? And for, you know, you can kind of touch on what we saw from Spurs last weekend, what we saw from Chelsea last weekend. How do you see this playing out, Joey?
Chelsea is in all of a sudden in a very tricky spot because, you know, you can and every week is important in the league. That's what makes it great. That's why we enjoy it so much. It really is true. But there are certain stretches that kind of define your season. And you know, there's a common axiom in sports that you can't lose a game or you can't win a game in the first 5 minutes or whatever, but you can lose it. And Chelsea, if they lose this weekend, which let's face it, there's a good chance they will go into Wembley. It's the first game for Spurs there. And Spurs obviously got the result this past weekend in Newcastle. You know, you're talking about being 6 points behind Tottenham already after 2 weeks. And obviously there's a lot of season left to be played, but that's a pretty precarious position to be in, especially when you looked so listless in that opening match. It's like, and this is, we've seen this from Chelsea before enough to know that this could be a warning sign about how this season's going to go. I wrote about this last year when they won the title, they swing just this wild pendulum between really looking like a top class team in the world and then suddenly falling to pieces for seemingly no reason. So if something, you know, they didn't have any fight last weekend against Burnley. And if going to Tottenham, one of your London rivals, who is also going to challenge you, you figure, for the league title, if that doesn't light a fire under you, if they come out flat again, there are, I mean, it's two games into the season, but there's got to be serious warning signs about Chelsea at that point.
Yeah, I think from what we've seen so far, you've got to say Tottenham are strong favorites for this. And Chelsea are going to be under pressure. They definitely need to respond. Tottenham are playing their first official league home game at Wembley, which I guess is going to be 20,000 empty seats, which is going to be sort of a different thing for them, not playing a packed stadium, not playing in the stand they're used to, which could put them, I think, you know, in my opinion, at more of a disadvantage than people may think. So we really need to see a response from Chelsea right away or they're going to get left behind.
Yeah, I mean, this could be the first result in, you know, talking about Conte's exit.
I mean, people are already talking about Conte.
Yeah, but I mean,
he's already the bookmaker's favorite to win the sack race.
Our own Ryan Bailey doesn't think he's going to last the season, that's for sure.
And there are a lot of people. I mean, that club is known for just, you know, pushing managers out the door. And the talk of the offseason, it seemed real back and forth. It was kind of, they were taking it out in the media. It wasn't behind closed doors. And the Costa situation, I think it bears repeating. It has been so poorly handled.
Terribly handled.
And it falls on the manager. He sent a text message to his star striker saying, yeah, we don't want you around anymore. Yeah. And they didn't make any arrangements to actually get rid of him.
No.
It's been poor management. And I will say that, you know, falls a lot on Conte. Abramovich obviously plays his role as well in this. But,
well, Abramovich is a factor. You know, the word is that Nemanja Matic was sold out from under Conte's nose. He didn't really want him to go. The club failed to get his principal target, which was Lukaku. So I think Conte probably has his own side of the story and could feel hard done by. But as you say, you don't send a text like that to Diego Costa unless you're sitting across your desk from Lukaku and he's about to sign the contract.
Exactly. And they, you know, Morata, I think, did look good when he came on. He got a goal. But I wonder about that midfield. I mean, how are they going to cope? Because Tottenham is not, you know, a joke of a side. They're legitimate contenders, and they were the closest side to Chelsea last year. Right now, if they come off with a good result this early in the season, it could really be the spiral that Chelsea never really gets out of, or I should say Conte never gets out of.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I think that to the Morata point, I think he did look really good when he came on last week, I think in the 59th minute, something like that, somewhere near the hour mark. And the way that they had to play at that point was, you know, they had to push forward. They had to kind of play through him, and he responded well with a goal and an assist. I'm not sure, to your point, Shahan, I'm not sure that that same thing can happen the full way. You got to figure Morata's going to start. And you're facing a much better side in Tottenham. And as you said, their midfield's a lot better. So Chelsea's going to need to get something from that midfield. It can't just be Morata making runs all over the place and making things happen. That's not going to be the kind of effort that can beat Tottenham.
So moving on from Chelsea to what looks like Chelsea but is wearing Manchester United colors.
I mean, Chelsea red.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about Matic, who was great last weekend. Lukaku, who used to be a Chelsea player and was Chelsea's number one target and ended up at Manchester United. And, you know, Jose Mourinho is the special one who anointed himself the special one at Chelsea. Was a manager there twice, won the league with them. And then also, you know, Juan Mata, who played last weekend. I had a pretty decent game too. Really, United looked really good. They're taking on Swansea. Is this the best? Was that the best team you saw last weekend, Joey?
I would say it was. I think that, and I swear this isn't my Slaven Bilic bias talking here. I think West Ham's a much better side than you saw last weekend. I think it was a combination of a couple things, though. You had some new players you were incorporating into the side. Zabaleta was there for the first time. Chicharito returned to Old Trafford. Arnautovic lined up on the wing for the first time for West Ham. So that was naturally going to take some time. But it was just a thorough masterclass on the part of Manchester United. They were setting up a ton of chances, and they scored four times. Lukaku looked absolutely ideal in the role that they're asking him to play. They just look dangerous. There's no weak link, it looked like, on the entire pitch. I mean, you could say the defense, but, you know, Phil Jones is at least and Eric Bailly are at least experienced enough now that they have, you know, Jones has been there forever and Bailly's had a season at Old Trafford under Jose Mourinho. And De Gea is back there. You got enough back there to ward off, you know, attacks while you keep the ball and you play through Lukaku and Mkhitaryan can make plays. And they looked really good. And they looked like, you know, when Mourinho sides, he gets a lot of you know, stick for the way that he plays away from home. But when his sides are top class and when his sides are dominating, you know, they're very complete. There's a lot of intricate play. And that's what you saw from them against, again, a team I think that is actually pretty good in West Ham, but they just had no answer for the best performance of the weekend.
Kind of mentioning or following up on that point, Alex, are you interested to see how Manchester United looks away from home?
Well, yeah, but I don't know if Swansea will be the greatest barometer of that. I think...
Yeah, with Gylfi gone especially.
Yeah, I don't want to say it's going to be a walkover for United, but this is definitely a United team that's come out of the blocks really strong. I think that game might have been just about the best performance in a United shirt I can think of for Paul Pogba. And you know, we haven't seen a Jose Mourinho team play that enjoyable football since the first half of his title-winning season with Chelsea a couple years ago when they played sensational attacking football and then basically shut up shop after Christmas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you would expect Mourinho to be a little bit more cautious on the road, but against Swansea, I think that he can probably let them play and still come away with a win.
Oh, I was going to say, like, I think just to finish out the point, you know, United, not only did they look incredible, they've got time to develop this because I think Everton's the toughest game they have, and it's at home until, I want to say, mid-October when they have to go to Anfield. So when you talk about how this team's going to look away from home, you know, they're not going to have to be and maybe have that bunker mentality for quite a while. They've got a lot of winnable away games to kind of grow into being even better than what we saw on Sunday, which is a scary proposition.
Well, let's you know, mention a couple other fixtures, and you know, Arsenal's playing Stoke this weekend as well. Liverpool versus Palace. Palace did not look good. And
what was that, by the way? Huddersfield Town? Hey, congratulations to Huddersfield and Patrick Stewart, Sir Patrick Stewart, their biggest supporter, their, at least their most well-known. But, man, Palace, good Lord.
Yeah, but,
sorry, I don't even know why that made me so mad. But
Well, speaking of the other side of that, Liverpool, they played in the Champions League midweek away at Hoffenheim and pulled out a result. And, you know, Mo Salah was wasteful with the chance, but generally looked pretty good. Trent Alexander-Arnold with a heck of a free kick.
That's how you score your first goal for a club.
Yeah, that was a big, big, big-time goal and just so sweetly hit. So they're up 2-1 after the first leg. And really, you know, even with playing midweek, and I think it's too early to say that anyone should be tired in the season.
Yeah.
So that shouldn't really be an issue for them. But it'll be interesting to see how Liverpool bounce back after, you know, that late draw they gave up last weekend. But let's get to the second marquee match, and really maybe even the first marquee match of the weekend, given how Everton's looked. Everton, Man City. How does this shake down, Alex?
Well, it's City at home. But then again, we saw City away last weekend against Brighton struggle for 70 plus minutes or so to break down a, you know, a team that pretty much sat behind, you know, behind the ball and packed the box with defenders. But still, you'd expect Manchester City. And when the break came, it finally did come, and, you know, they won the game, I guess you could say, fairly comfortably in the end. I think we'll get a lot more of a read on just how good this Man City side is from an Everton side that was impressive today, and it's Europa League qualifier, and has just generally been shaping up to a team that I think a lot of people are expecting to, you know, maybe be an outside contender for a top four finish. But I still think that City's got what it takes. They're probably going to come out on top.
I said that I agreed that Manchester United's performance last weekend was the most impressive. I think Manchester City's was the most important. And I know that sounds kind of stupid because it's like, well, all the wins are important or whatever. But that's the kind of game that you're really going to have to win a lot. That's the kind of 3 points you're going to have to grind out if you want to win a title. You know, Brighton they have an incredible crowd. You know, it's the South Coast. Everybody loves it down there. They did sit behind the ball a lot. There's a lot of factors that would kind of make it tough. And while City did, you know, not they left it late to score. I think maybe they scored, the 70th minute, you were saying?
Like,
before they scored the first of their two goals. But I don't know if I would have said they were struggling necessarily either, because they're creating plenty of chances. And
had a good game, the Brighton keeper.
The Brighton keeper had a very good game.
Made some fantastic saves.
And I think that the fact that City was able to pull that out and not just be kind of, you know, that we know their attacking talent is outstanding. We know that they can play with a great flair, and they've got a lot of goal scorers and match winners in the offensive third. But the fact that they were able to grind out a result like that, I think, is kind of important. And in that, hopefully for them, it speaks to their mindset of how they're going to be this season. Because that would have been an easy game to draw, or maybe even not score and have Brighton somehow luck into a late winner. But that wasn't the case. And I think going home, City against Everton stands a really good chance to win. I'm going to have to throw a little water on the Everton party so far. I mean, they needed a goal from Wayne Rooney to beat a Stoke side that's generally under Mark Hughes, not that great away from home. And I just, you know, I'm not there yet with Everton.
They beat Hajduk Split today.
And then Hajduk tried to attack – their fans tried to attack the Everton fans.
No relation to Frankie Hajduk, by the way.
No. You mean 08 MLS champion, Frankie Hayden?
Yes.
I just went there with the Columbus crew. Shout out to the Columbus crew.
What is MLS?
When he used to leave the locker room, we called it a Hajduk Split.
all right, this is definitely going off the rails. But, you know, for me, I'm interested to see more than anything else who Pep Guardiola picks for his team.
You think he's going to pick another 5-0-5 formation, basically?
I don't know what he's going to pick, to be honest with you. I just honestly am miffed at every time he picks a lineup, because it could be he might pick no forwards. He might pick no defenders. Like, who knows what he's going to pick? But I think against a team like Everton, although you may say they're a little bit inflated, I think that he'll be cautious enough to pick a stronger side. Because I think, you know, I think the Gabriel Jesus and Aguero partnership doesn't look good, but I don't think Aguero looked bad. I thought he looked pretty good. He looked the better of the two, but I think that a little bit has to do with Sterling and Sané not starting. So is he going to, you know, go with the young front three? Is it going to go with Aguero? How is he going to mix Aguero into that? I'm very curious to see who he puts out there. And, you know, Man City had this weird midweek friendly between the first and second weeks where they had guys like Yaya playing and Gabriel Jesus actually came on as a substitute. It was a very weird timing. It was with, I forget which Serie A side, but it was with the Serie A side because their season doesn't start until this upcoming weekend. And we are actually going to take a look around after the break. The FC Yahoo podcast is brought to you by Stop Signs. Stop Signs. They have eight sides. And we are back here to look around Europe. Just before we get out of here, there are plenty of leagues starting up. La Liga, Bundesliga, and also Serie A. But, you know, we've gotten to see Bayern and some of the German teams already playing because they do this kind of interesting thing to make their Super Cup a little bit more meaningful after the Super Cup. Rather than going to the league the following weekend, they go into the cup games, and it's lower, you know, lower division matchups essentially. So you do actually play a strong team in the Super Cup, makes it a little more meaningful. But the Bundesliga is coming back with a bang. On Friday Night Football, we've got Bayer versus Bayern. Yes, Bayer Leverkusen versus Bayern Munich. This is one heck of a way to start the season.
It's pretty big.
Yeah, it is going to be fun. But let's just cut through the meat and ask right away. Is anyone going to top Bayern this year in Germany?
Yes, because Christian Pulisic is going to score 50 goals for Dortmund.
Yeah.
He's not. They're not. I still love the Bundesliga. It's a lot of fun. But
yeah. I think it actually speaks to the Bundesliga that it's so entertaining, and yet we all know how this movie is going to end with virtual assuredness.
Yeah, because you can't say that about certain other leagues that are always won by the same team, Sean.
Oh, no.
Which league is
that? I think
he
just transitioned into Serie A for you.
No. Well, before we move on to Serie A, let's slow down.
Sorry.
By the way, I will just mention that Napoli did beat Juve in the Super Cup or Supercoppa Italiana, or however you I don't speak any Italian, so I have no clue. But it was one of those results where Napoli looked really good, and they actually looked pretty good against Nice, too. Dries Mertens still playing out of his mind. He's continued that on. So it will be fun to watch Napoli and see how they shape up. But before I go down that tunnel, I just want to mention a couple other Bundesliga matches that are worth keeping an eye on. Wolfsburg versus Dortmund. That should be a fun game. Also Schalke versus Leipzig. There are three pretty much heavyweight matchups to start off the Bundesliga season this weekend. So
Sunday we should give a shout out to the Rhineland Derby. Mönchengladbach versus Cologne.
Yeah. It's like I said, the Bundesliga is not, you know, throwing out any cupcakes to start with. They're going in hard for the kill. Well, we will talk about Serie A then. I think the match of the weekend is Inter versus Fiorentina. It'll be interesting to see, you know, how Inter looks this year, and Fiorentina is generally a pretty strong side as well. You know, Juve and Napoli are the two sides, obviously. I think that are the most set and the two clear favorites. I think Juve more than Napoli even, but Roma will be very interesting with Monchi on this, you know, working the boardroom and buying in players, and they've kind of reshaped a fair amount, but Roma's been pretty good and knocking on the door in many ways, and Milan has spent just tons and tons of money.
That's the one I'm looking forward
to.
Yeah, you know, they just won 6-0 today against a team whose name I have a hard time with in the Europa League, Shkendija.
Yes, the candy jar.
The candy jar. Yes. But
it's, yeah, we, in any case, yes, Milan, it will be very interesting to see how AC Milan looks, and as it will be interesting to see how Serie A shapes up, because they do have four Champions League spots again, guaranteed. So we're going to see more Serie A sides in Europe. There's more money in that league now. I think the quality is going to be much, much better than it's been in recent years since the drop-off, since they frankly went to three in the Champions League. So it'll be, you know, Serie A kicks off, and I think Inter-Fiorentina is the match to keep an eye on. But obviously it'll be interesting to see if Juve doesn't quite look right, maybe stumbles early. But it's a fun time of year when all the leagues kick off. And of course, the final league that is La Liga. And, you know, we got our fill in. And, you know, before I go any further forward, we probably should have mentioned this earlier. Today was the day that there was a terrorist attack in Barcelona. And it's just horrific, everything about it. And we just, you know, we wanted to just send out our condolences to everybody affected by it and really anyone who even came across the news, because it is just awful, awful stuff. And, you know, we're all hoping for the best. And if you guys want to add anything more than that, feel free to.
Yeah, it's I'll only add, it's a beautiful city, and it's also a really, really strong and resilient city. And we wish you guys the best. You know, I think that's basically all there is to say.
Yeah, certainly this is becoming an all too familiar story for a lot of the places in Europe that we talk about in doing this job. And it doesn't get any easier to see this kind of news anytime. So, yeah, our hearts do go out to everyone affected, as Shahan said so eloquently.
Barcelona does start the weekend against Real Betis. No Suarez, kind of a weakened side all around, but they do have Messi, so you still expect them to get those 3 points. But it'll be interesting to see if this side, coming off of the comprehensive beatdown that they got in the Spanish Super Cup, if this quote-unquote inferior side to Real Madrid drops points early, La Liga could be over before it even really gets going. So it'll be interesting to watch. Real is away at Deportivo. I believe Sevilla Espanyol on Saturday, I want to say, is probably the match. If you really want good competitive match, that's probably the best one.
Yeah, two teams that are closer to each other.
Yeah, in terms of overall. Exactly, in terms of actual competition. But I think we are nearing the end of the podcast. And thank you again for listening in. You should follow us. FC Yahoo is on Twitter. You can also find us at facebook.com/FC Yahoo, all one word. For Joey Galino, for Alex Baker, this is Shahan Ahmed, and this has been the FC Yahoo podcast. Thanks for listening.